operator, and good morning to reporters that are on the line, along with editors and columnists, on behalf of the California Budget Project, which, as most of you all know, is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization taking no position on Proposition 76. I want to welcome you to today's press briefing, which features Gene Ross, the executive director of the California Budget Project. Gene will have an opening statement that will provide some of the details of Proposition 76 and its impact on various state programs should it become law. Then we'll open the phone lines up for questions to Gene from reporters, editors, and columnists who are on the call. Gene, why don't you start with your opening comments, please? Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning. And my brief opening comments will probably be a little less brief, but I think as most of them, some of us might like. But I think as most of you know, this is an extremely complex ballot measure. It's really what probably should have been three or four measures rolled into one. And while the California Budget Project is not a formal opponent of Proposition 76, we have serious concerns with the measure's potential impact on the budget and budget process in California, as I think my remarks will probably make clear. What I hope to do in this call is to outline briefly what the measure does, briefly what some of the research we've done has disclosed, and then take questions that you might have on various provisions of the measure. And I'm happy to talk with you individually later in greater detail as well. And we're not looking at this as sort of a breaking news type of event, but rather as background for, I think, a lot of the coverage that you'll be doing in the next days and weeks. So what does Proposition 76 do? The main provisions of the measure are, first, that it establishes a new state spending limit that would be in addition to, rather than a substitute for, the existing state appropriations limit, which has been in law since 1979. And that limit would be based on what the state spent in the prior year and spending to the by no more than the average growth in general and special fund revenues for the three prior years. Second, Proposition 76 allows the governor to declare a fiscal emergency and cut spending, notwithstanding any provision of this Constitution, quote-unquote, if revenues fall 1.5% or more below forecast levels, or if the governor determines that the state will spend at least half of the balance in the budget stabilization account during a fiscal year. The legislature would have 45 days to act, and the governor would have the ability to either sign or reject an alternative proposed by the legislature. If the governor doesn't deem that to be an appropriate solution, then the governor's ability to cut would kick in. The same power would take effect, and this speaks to the third major provision of Proposition 76, which would be to set up a mechanism that would, in the event of a budget delay, allow the prior year's budget to roll forward into the new fiscal year, and in bad budget years, after 30 days, the governor would have the ability to cut spending unilaterally if the legislature didn't produce an acceptable substitute. The fourth major set of changes are a complex package of modifications to the Proposition 98 minimum school funding guarantee. And I'm not going to focus a lot on that. We do have a paper on our website, and I'm happy to take questions. I think this is one that there has been, part of the measure that there has been a little bit more coverage on, so I'm going to focus most of my remarks on some of the other provisions. But in brief, the Prop 98 changes would eliminate Test 3, which is the so-called safety valve provision of Prop 98 that provides an alternative formula for the state to spend less on K through 14 education in bad budget years. Prop 76 would also eliminate, and I think this is what you've probably heard the most about, the so-called maintenance factor provisions of the Prop 98 guarantee, including some approximately $3.8 billion in standing maintenance factor obligations. And instead, the state would make one-time payments or a one-time payment that would total $3.8 billion sometime within the next 15 years. I think there's a lot of confusion around maintenance factor, understandably so. It's something that I think makes a lot of our eyes glaze over when we hear about it. Maintenance factor is not a loan per se, in that education doesn't get back the money it lost, either due to a suspension or a test 3 year. Instead, it's a restoration of the minimum funding level over time as the state's fiscal picture improves. And once that restoration kicks in, the base goes back up to where it would have been in the absence of bad years. It stays at that higher level. So what Prop 76 really does is say, instead of permanently increasing the minimum funding level for schools by $3.8 billion and keeping it there and growing that increase in the future, schools would receive a one-time payment totaling $3.8 billion. This is roughly equivalent to the difference between your employer giving you a one-time bonus or permanently increasing your base salary, which is, I think, the way most real people can probably relate to that. The final big set of changes in Prop 76 is the elimination of the legislature's ability to suspend the transfer of sales tax revenues paid on gasoline and other vehicle fuels, the so-called Prop 42 transfer. If this measure becomes law, the legislature could no longer suspend that transfer and keep the money in the general fund to help balance the budget. And the legislature would also be prohibited from borrowing monies from special funds to help close a general fund budget gap. And while the first set of provisions are largely aimed at helping to balance the budget or maintaining controlling and limiting spending growth, the final provision would actually make it more difficult to use a particular tool for helping to balance the budget. The first thing that I'd like to do is to talk briefly about some research that we've done looking at the potential impact of Proposition 76's spending cap. What we did is to go back in time and look at actual spending, actual revenues, and revenue growth, and say, if the voters had approved Proposition 76 and its spending cap in 1987, 1990, or 95, what would the impact be on spending today? And I can tell you, and again, I'm happy to go into some detail individually, the choice of years doesn't have a big impact on the outcome. We tried to pick points that reflected different times in the traditional budget cycle in California. What we found is that if the spending cap had been approved in either 1987 or 1990, the state would be allowed to, allowable spending would be $12.6 billion lower in the year that we're in now than the amount of spending authorized by the budget signed into law by the governor in July. Had the measure been approved in 1995, which in many years is a year that's similar to the one we're in now in terms of being towards the tail end of a number of years of budget deficits, allowable spending would be about $6 billion than the spending authorized by the budget signed into law by the governor in July. In the first two instances, spending would be need if you cut spending across the board. board, you'd be looking at about an 11% reduction in order to bring spending in line with the cap. In the 1995 scenario, about a 5% reduction. And again, when you deal with big numbers, I think it's always tough to get your hands around what it means. If you compare that $12.6 billion difference to what it would buy in terms of general fund spending, it's an amount that's larger than total state spending for higher education, all three segments, or, and that's an or, not an and, or combined general fund spending for business, transportation, and housing programs, resources programs, environmental protection, and social services. So it would be a very big difference between where we are now and where we could be if the cap had been approved at some time in the past. Moreover, and I think this is key because a number of the supporters have said, well, this really isn't a spending cap. It's a smoothing mechanism. What we found is if you, again, using the same set of base years, if you compare what the cap would have been versus actual state revenue collections, you find that the cap would have been lower than actual revenues in 15 out of 18 years under the 1987 base year scenario, in 13 out of 15 years under the 1990 scenario, and 6 out of 10 under the 1995 scenario. So actually it would over time result in lowering spending to below what could be supported in the long term by our tax system. And I think the legislative analyst in the ballot pamphlet does concur that the long-term impact of the spending cap would be to ratchet down spending. It largely happens because we don't believe that, meaning the budget project, if you have a very deep drop in revenues, as happened in the early 1990s or the early part of this decade, it would be very difficult to accumulate substantial enough reserves to maintain, to pull that money out of the reserve to boost spending, to keep spending at the maximum allowed by the cap. And again, I'd be happy to try and explain that in a little bit more detail. It really has to do with the cyclical nature of revenue decline. The next big thing that the cap would do that's different than our current cap is to apply to a number of voter-approved taxes. And if you go back and look from 1979 when the voters approved the so-called GAN limit to the future, a number of the voter-approved taxes, the increase in the gas tax in Prop 111, Prop 10 and the tobacco tax for early childhood programs, Prop 99's tobacco tax for health programs, and the new tax on high-income earners that supports mental health programs. All of those measures excluded that money from our existing spending cap. They would be back under the cap under Proposition 76. And I think that has a set of consequences that bear a little bit of scrutiny. For one thing, and I think it's a little bit maybe counterintuitive, and there certainly are some questions about how the cap would be applied under Prop 76. You would end up with a situation, for example, with the two tobacco taxes, which typically are a declining revenue source from year to year, where in years when the spending cap applied, some of that money would be held back under the way I think most of us believe the cap would operate. So some of those taxes approved by the voters wouldn't go out to support the programs that voters authorized. And a consequence of that is, as our modeling suggests, might happen. If you end up in a situation where the cap applies for a number of years sequentially, you may end up with a very significant reserves building up in those funds, no way to sort of free that money up without either going back to the voters to give some of it back or to amend the state's constitution, or alternatively, to cut deeper into the state's general fund spending in order to allow spending out of some of those special funds. And again, the amounts could end up to be fairly significant. Going back to our base year modeling, this year, for example, we estimate that about $43 million in Prop 10 revenues would have been held back under the cap as well. Next question we said that we try to answer is, how do the powers granted the governor under his ability to cut compare to those in other states? And we've reviewed surveys done by the National Association of State Budget Officers, by the National Conference of State Legislatures, and called around to a number of states and reviewed a number of state constitutions. And what we found is that the powers granted under Prop 76 are potentially broader than those granted to any other governor, with the potential exception of Missouri. Most of the states, a number of states do give governors the power to make adjustments mid-year in state budgets under certain circumstances. However, most states put some limits around those powers and or do not vest those powers in the state constitution. And in fact, only a very small grant virtually unlimited power. None of them are states that also have a two-thirds vote or greater to pass a state budget, which we think is an important interaction as well. Typically, some of the constraints put around governors' power to cut includes not allowing governors to cut spending that goes out to local governments, not allowing cuts to school aid, not allowing cuts to the salaries paid to elected officials, judicial branch, for example. So, again, I think we've heard a lot that these are powers typically granted to other governors. Again, we can only find one state that's potentially quite as broad as what would be authorized under Prop 76. The last set of questions that we promised to answer in this call would be the potential impact on health and social service programs. And I think this is an area, again, that deserves a closer look by many of you, because I think there's some potentially very complex interactions with other areas of state law and some other ballot measures that would apply to health and social service programs. First, I would highlight the potential interaction between the spending cap and the 1991 initiative known as realignment, which shifted responsibility for a number of health, social service, and mental health programs from the state to counties and gave them a dedicated funding source to pay for those programs. In years when the Prop 76 spending cap applies, it would apply to the local revenue fund, which is the fund that supports realignment. There is a provision under the original realignment law which interacts again with the state's rules around state mandates as imposed in the original spending cap, the state of the GAM measure, and then reinforced by Prop 1A. A number of particularly local program administrators question whether the holding back of realignment monies would be sufficient to invoke the poison pill provisions of realignment. What that would do would be to undo the two tax increases that support supported realignment, several billion dollars a year in funds, but it would also throw that program responsibility back on state government, which would create, again, a whole set of program consequences in terms of program administration. In some cases, the state has dismantled the bureaucracies that governed those programs in the pre-1991 era. I think realignment is a place that there's fairly bipartisan agreement that counties have done a good job with these programs and have actually delivered services that are more responsible to their clients than the old way of doing things. So I think the potential for deconstructing realignment would not be good for either clients or state or local government finance. The second potential major impact on health and social services has to do with the governor's ability to cut, and specifically cuts to health and social service programs. And I think if you look September 30th report to the legislature on Proposition 76, they go into a fairly detailed look at the impact of cuts to entitlement programs such as Medi-Cal and the CalWORKs program. The analyst argues, and while I think there is potentially some disagreement, there is also some case law that supports the position that if the governor were to cut funding for Medi-Cal, for example, the program would be fully operational until the monies to fund the program ran out. In other words, and more simply, if you cut funding by 1/12, you would have 11 months of a Medi-Cal program providing full benefit levels to everybody who's currently eligible, and you would have no services whatsoever in the 12th month of the year. Obviously, this would be extremely disruptive for people who depend on Medi-Cal for their health coverage, particularly disruptive for people who are in 24-hour care facilities such as nursing homes, who could be left not only without health care but with no place to live for the month of June under the scenario outlined. I think there are also some various, very serious due process concerns. If, for example, somebody was unfortunate enough to have a heart attack in the month of June rather than May, where their coverage didn't extend for that month. And I think there's also a number of considerations with respect to cost shifts onto health care providers, particularly so-called safety net providers in county facilities and community clinics, who would experience significant cost shifts. I talked a little bit about realignment under some of the potential and the interactions with mandates. Again, the legislative analyst has identified, at least in the CalWORKs law, a provision which requires counties to continue to make cash assistance programs in the absence of state funding for those benefits. So I think there is fairly broad agreement that, again, if a governor were to cut funding there, counties would be left holding the bag for those services for some portion of the year, which would be a fairly potential cost shift to county governments. I want to wrap up with a couple of unanswered questions in Proposition 76. And the longer I look at this measure, the more I see that we don't really know about what it might mean. First, and I think most important, is the fact that we don't really know what spending would be subject to the cap. And that's because Proposition 76 doesn't define the term total expenditures that would be subject to the spending cap. In particular, I think there is some disagreement and ambiguity about whether spending from non-governmental cost funds, most notably the public safety sales tax monies authorized by Prop 172, and whether they'd be covered by the cap, whether spending from trust voters. Second, I think, is a whole set of interactions between mandate law, which is something that I think really makes a lot of our eyes glaze over, and the spending cap, the governor's power to cut, and the provisions added by Prop 1A that raise the bar in terms of what constitutes a state mandate on local governments to cover more situations when the state cuts funding for certain types of local services. I think a lot of unanswered questions there. Again, I think there are a lot of questions with respect to health and social service programs, cuts to so-called entitlement programs, what that would mean for beneficiaries, in what cases in some of the programs like adult protective services and home supportive services, would counties be left bearing the full cost of some of these programs in the event the governor cut funding for those particular services. That's a lot. This is a complex measure, and I think I'll wrap up and take your questions.
Fine. Before we go to questions, Jean, why don't you give everybody your website address where I know some of the information that you cited is available in your reports.
We have three papers on our website as of today. We hope to have a fourth by the end of the week at www.cbpcaliforniabudgetproject.org. We have a little nice little box that includes links to our publications on Prop 76. We have a paper that takes the big picture overview of the measure, one that looks at some of the modeling and other provisions of the spending cap that I discussed, and a third paper that goes into detail on the impact on school spending.
Thanks, Jean. Operator, we'll now go to questions.
Thank you, sir. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, please press star 1 for any questions.
And if reporters will please identify themselves and their media organization as you put your question. One thing as we get started, Jean noted in the beginning that if you'd like to talk to her offline here, she can be reached at her office. I want to give you the name of her press person that can do this, Lisa Gardner, and the number in Sacramento is 916-444-0500. 916-444-0500. Lisa Gardner can arrange interviews with Jean one-on-one after this audio conference is finished. Operator, first question, please.
Yes, it comes from Christopher Martinez with KPFA News. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. In one of the papers that's on the California Budget Project website, one of the sections is that Prop 76 would lock in bad times. I was wondering if you could say a little more about that.
That header refers to the provision of the spending cap that I briefly described a little earlier, which says that when you're calculating how much the state would be allowed to spend, you take actual spending in the prior year and increase it by the average revenue growth for the three prior years. So if, let's take this year, for example, if last year the state hadn't spent up to the amount that it was allowed to spend, you wouldn't look at what it was allowed to spend in calculating the spending cap for this year. You'd look at that lower amount of actual spending, and that's different than the existing state appropriations limit, which keeps a sort of a bookkeeping entry of what was the cap and then increases the cap from year to year. So in years when the state didn't have enough resources to fully spend everything it was allowed to spend, you would use that lower level of actual spending going forward. And that's why we say it would lock in bad times. And I think, again, if you look at the kind of revenue drop that we had at the beginning of this budget crisis, if you go back to the early 1990s, what you find in the modeling that we've done is that the balance in the reserve wouldn't have been large enough to to allow the state to keep spending at its cap. One reason why the balance in the reserve would be large enough is because only a quarter in one of the other things that Prop 76 does is it establishes a formula for what to do with monies that are in excess of the cap in those years. Three quarters of it would go to pay back existing debts, school and road construction, and a quarter of that money would go into the reserve. But since you're only putting a small fraction of that money into the reserve, we don't believe that the reserve would be large enough to carry you through some of the traditional downtimes that we've had in California.
Operator, next question, please.
Thank you. We go next to Tim Hurt with Ventura County Star. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Gene. This is Tim Hurt with Ventura County Star, as you said. I'm curious on this realignment issue, and you talk about the poison pill provision that the counties wanted to challenge. You said there were two tax increases that supported the realignment. Could you talk about that and how that was set up and what would happen if counties, in fact, decided this they couldn't bear the circumstances under Prop 76?
And I think this is potentially scary, and I say that because I think there is pretty broad agreement that realignment was something that the state has done in the past two decades that actually worked both for the state and for the people who depend, and for local governments and the people who depend on those services. Back in 1991, when the state was in the last deep budget crisis, one of the transactions that it undertook was to increase the state sales tax, increase the vehicle license fees, to give that money to counties along with an equivalent dollar value of service responsibility for a set of social service programs, everything from IHSS to Child Protective Services, some of the other social service programs, mental health programs, and a greater share of responsibility for some indigent health care programs. Counties were concerned, and I think remain concerned, that they could end up with more responsibility than they're getting money. And if, for example, I think the line of thought with respect to Prop 76 runs, that if the state was forced to hold back some of that sales tax, some of that VLF, counties would be left with the same statutory responsibility for service for service delivery. If a county, any of the 58 counties, Modoc County, decided that under state law, and particularly under Prop 1A, that constituted an unreimbursed mandate, they could go through the necessary steps of filing a mandate claim. If they went to court and the courts agreed with that position, that blows up realignment. The taxes would be repealed. And the programs would be shifted back to the state. And again, there would be a series of steps involving mandates, the mandate commission, and a potential legal challenge before that happened. But again, I think it's an area where there is a considerable amount of concern.
Operator, next question, please.
Thank you, sir. We go next to Linda Glashill with the San Francisco Chronicle. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, Jean. I wanted to follow up on something you mentioned about money for essentially special funds that would be sort of held under the cap. You said your analysis said that Prop 10 revenue would have been $43 million, wouldn't have been able to be spent this year if the tax was in place?
Yes.
Okay. And, I mean, have you looked overall at that? I mean, essentially this money would just sit there until it could be spent. Is that the idea?
Yes, and actually back to the prior question on realignment, if you look just at the realignment sales tax, we estimate that the state would have held back about $194 million. So, again, we're looking at a fairly sizable sum $43 million in Prop 10, about $22 million in Prop 99 monies. The state could not spend that money. It couldn't divert it for some other purpose. It would go, let's take the case of Prop 10, into a special reserve to be used only for Prop 10 supported programs. But that money couldn't be spent until the state was below the spending cap. And again, I think some of the modeling that we've done suggests that we could end up in a situation where the state is up against the cap for a number of years running. So you could end up with very substantial reserves building up in some of those voter-approved funds. In the general fund, to the extent you have or a sizable reserves, or in special funds that are supported by taxes and fees imposed by the legislature would have the ability to cut those taxes or fees. But again, and I think this is one of the perhaps unintended consequences of Prop 76, if you cut a tax or a fee, you would reduce revenue growth from year to year, which would have the impact of further reducing or sort of tightening up the spending cap even more in future years. So you would end up with a cap that requires you to cut even deeper.
So even though the need might be there, say, for health programs with regard to tobacco or mental health programs when in regard to Prop 56, or roads, for that matter, when you're talking about the gas tax, the money would just be sitting there. People would be paying their gas tax every day, but they wouldn't be necessarily seeing the results on their road.
Right. The money would be building up in the gas tax fund for future years. And again, that is the operation of the spending cap. In the modeling that we've done, we've assumed that the cap, and there's some lack of clarity, again, in the language of the initiative, we've assumed that it would be applied to require the same percentage reduction in each of the special funds and in the general fund in the state budget. The legislative analyst in their September 30th would agree that that's probably what the drafters intended. However, it could be read in several other ways as well.
Operator, next question, please.
Thank you, sir. We go next to Jim Miller with the Press Enterprise. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, G. I had a question about the realignment as well. I mean, my memory was that because I think it was San Diego County had sued the state and won a couple years ago, that poison pill would have been activated, but they did legislation to get rid of it. Is this the same kind of poison pill, or is there something else out there that if people pass Prop 76 could potentially take effect?
And I am going off of some papers written by some of the affiliates of the counties. Some changes were made, and again, I think it is an area that there is a distinct lack of clarity, I think in large part because nobody has tested what the new law approved by the voters in Prop 1A means. And so again, I don't want to imply that I have a hard and fast answer. I think this is something that I'd hope that many of you on this call time and do some research and do some reporting on between now and the election.
And the other question I had was, you know, back in March 2004, the talk was that Proposition 58 would I think the governor said tear up the credit card and limit overspending. But what do you see as being? I mean, what has Prop 58 done? What do you think?
I think we don't know yet. Prop 58 hasn't been allowed to fully take place. It did set up a schedule for transferring funds into the budget stabilization account. It did backload those transfers, so the first one, I believe, would take effect next year. In terms of borrowing, it put some limits on bonds similar to the debt deficit financing bonds that were approved in Prop 57. But I think if you look at the budget agreement signed into law, part on some new and different types of borrowing to finance the state's obligations in the Paterno case, which is an obligation to pay for some flood damages actually dating back to the 1980s, and to continue to assume that the state will issue a pension obligation bond. That bond has been held up by challenge. Again, the budget signed into law this year assumes that the state will issue bonds backed by revenues from tribal gaming. So I think, you know, what the limits of
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask, before I started, I wanted to let the participants know that Indy Bay, we're tape recording this and running it live over our radio station. So if in this complicated discussion you want to review how things were phrased exactly, in about an hour I can post it on our website as an audio file at indybay.org. I wanted to ask, perhaps this is a simplified way of stating the proposition, but would this defeat the concept of taxation with representation in that a vote in the present on November would take away the right of future voters to have their money dispersed? In other words, the money would be locked into a method of spending that would essentially freeze it, and that future voters would not be able to spend the money in a broader way.
Future voters could always make changes to this measure, just like this measure changes past measures approved by the voters. It doesn't take away the rights of voters in the future. I think that is important to note. I think there have been some questions raised, and in the first of the papers we published on Prop 76, I think in terms of the balance of power, there are some questions about whether the changes proposed by Prop 76 are sufficiently broad that they would constitute a constitutional revision rather than simply an amendment to the Constitution. Under our current Constitution, voters can amend the Constitution through the initiative process, but they can't revise it. I think, again, if this measure is approved by the voters, I would not be surprised to see a legal challenge suggesting that Prop 76 should be more appropriately deemed to be a revision of the Constitution.
Operator, next question, please.
Thank you. Next is Ed Mendel from the San Diego Union Tribune.
Oh, hi, Jane. Hey, in your modeling, did you look forward, have any idea when the cap might actually apply if it were to be approved by voters?
No, we looked backwards and said, what would it have meant if you look at actual revenues, actual spending in the past? And we didn't look forward, I think, because, as you and many of you know, there's the lack of precision in forward-going forecasts is sufficient enough that it would be hard to predict. And I think the most telling example is something that I think John Myers from KQED has reported on, and maybe others of you have as well, where he asked the legislative analyst, what would it have meant this year? And they asked if it had been approved last year, and they estimated that it would have limited spending by about $3 billion. In other words, the state would have had to cut spending by about $3 billion in the current year in order to get itself under the cap. So we haven't gone forward. I think they're not good forecasts of revenues going forward, and we didn't think that it would really be a relevant exercise.
Operator, next question, please.
We'll go next to Jake Henshaw with Gannett News Service.
Hi, Gene. A couple of questions. One, is anything clearly excluded, any source of revenue clearly excluded from this, or is everything either clearly covered or they're, you know, in a gray zone in terms of being affected by Prop 76?
The spending cap applies to total expenditures. That term is not defined. The proponents say look to the definition of the adjustment factor, which excludes non-governmental cost funds, trust funds, bond funds, federal funds. I think that may be where a court would look, but we don't know the answer to that. So I think in terms of what spending would be capped, good question. That is something I think a court would likely be asked to rule on in the future. In terms of the governor's ability to cut spending, that spending applies, quote unquote, notwithstanding any other provision of the Constitution. It excludes spending needed to comply with federal laws and regulations, spending needed to fulfill the state's debt service obligations, and spending related to contracts entered into before the effective date of the measure. This gives me an opening to say something with respect to what that might mean in terms of spending required by federal law. In many cases, federal law doesn't actually require states to do something. Medi-Cal is an example. Federal law does not require states to have a Medicaid program. It simply says if you have one, you have to meet certain standards, and then the federal government will provide matching dollars for qualified expenses. So again, I think, you know, what the term spending required by federal law and regulation is an area where there'll be a lot of question marks should this measure become law.
And then you had a second question?
Just, I wondered, you know, you said that, you mentioned a variety of, like, the money that would come in under Prop 10 and Prop 9, others could be basically held if they exceeded the cap or the total. Is there any order or anything about, any rules about how that would come out? In other words, say you've got several years of these funds backed up, money backed up in several different funds, and releasing all of it would exceed the cap. Is there anything that says which order they come back in, or would it be a percentage of each one so that they'd each come back in partially, or is that addressed at all?
I think the short answer is we don't have a lot of guidance on that. That monies could only be spent when the state is below the spending cap. I think the legislature would have discretion on how to pull it out through the state budget process. And it could decide all gas tax, no gas tax, all Prop 10, no Prop 10. CSU fees, for example, student fees paid to the CSU system would also be subject to the cap. The legislature, I think, through the Budget Act would have some discretion there.
Okay, thank you. Operator, next question, please.
Thank you. We go next to Pia Lopez with the Sacramento Bee.
Hi. You mentioned that school funding would remain subject to the Proposition 98 guarantee with a big but in it, that the legislature, of course, could suspend it, or that if there's a fiscal emergency, the governor could unilaterally reduce school funding. In describing the dire consequences of 76, are you assuming that either the legislature would suspend or that the governor would cut school funding?
We're not assuming either one. Certainly that notwithstanding any other provision of the Constitution, part of the governor's power to cut spending, I think, would allow the governor to reduce funding below the minimum guarantee.
hearing last week, the proponents suggested that because of the elimination of the maintenance factor restoration provisions in the guarantee, it might be very tough in the future to convince the legislature by a two-thirds vote, which would continue to be required, to suspend the guarantee. I would say on the other side of that is if you end up in a situation where the spending cap is requiring substantial cuts in total spending, if you take education off the table, that means the cuts in other parts of the budget would have to be just that much deeper. So it would be a tough choice, I'm not assuming.
Operator, next question, please.
We have no further questions at this time. Once again, please press star 1 if you have any more questions.
Okay, we've got a few more minutes if anybody has any final questions to take it. But, Gene, why don't you once again repeat your website address in case people want to look for additional information in the form of your reports.
www.cbp.org.
Great. Operator, any further questions?
No, sir. We do not have any questions in queue.
Good. Everybody has. Yes, Gene, any final comments?
Thank you for joining us.
Okay. You have Jean's phone number and the website address. If you want to talk to her offline, I'm sure she'd be glad to do it through Lisa Gardner, her press secretary. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I hope you found this very informative in terms of a very complex ballot initiative. Thank you very much.
That does conclude today's conference call. We appreciate your participation, and you may now disconnect.
And so we do disconnect there. You are listening to Indie Bay Radio here in San Francisco. And that was a live press conference from the California Budget Project. The initiative Prop 76 is coming up later this year, November 2nd, and there are a variety of different, most progressive. This is one of the three initiatives that Arnold is putting out. And the Green Party and Peace and Freedom Party are both recommending a no vote. I believe the Democratic Party as well is a general rule. Of course, all of these parties have county and regional chapters, so their slate cards may be different throughout the state. But as a general rule, Democrats, Greens, and Peace and Freedom and other progressives are recommending a no vote on this. But this California Budget Project, being a nonprofit, is not allowed to specifically state either way how they stand on it, but in doing this educational outreach, they're pretty much laying it out so that you can make a decision on your own. All right, you're listening again to Indie Bay Radio here in San Francisco, and we'll return to some good old broadcasting.